Welcome to the Summit Church Sermon of the Week. For more information about this podcast and other resources, please visit summitsanmarcos.com.
So, you guys ready to dive into the Word this morning? Awesome. Go with me to Genesis 2:18. Genesis 2:18. This is about Adam and Eve, and you know, legend has it that as Eve was brought to Adam, and God said, hey, this is your wife. Adam saw her for the first time, and his jaw dropped, and he just said, whoa, man. And then God said, I know, she's your wife. She's for you. And he said, whoa, man. And then he said, what do you want to name her? And he said, whoa, man. And God said, I guess we'll name her Woman, you know, woman. And so that's how the origin of woman, woman, actually came. I don't know if you knew that, but it's a legend. Legend has it. That's the English meaning behind woman. I'm really into etymology. It's whoa, man. Whoa. Right? And so another legend, it tells how Adam and Eve were once walking in the garden. And as they were there, Eve looked over to Adam and just said, Adam, are you happy? You know, are you happy with me and you know are in this relationship and everything? And he said, oh, Eve, absolutely. He said, Eve, you're the only one. There's no one else for me. You're the only one I'm ever going to be with, you know. Literally, you're the only one, you know. There's literally no one else. No, and so they had a beautiful security in their relationship there. And so, hey, are you there? Are you at Genesis 2:18 yet? Awesome. Hey, so Genesis 2:18, it says this. It says, then the Lord God said, it is not good that man should be alone. I will make a helper fit for him. And every man said, amen. Thank you, God. Right? I need help, you know? And so that word alone, ironically, the Hebrew word for that, the pronunciation of the Hebrew word for alone is pronounced bad. And it's spelled B-A-D. It's bad to be alone, right? God put that right in there. And the first time we ever see the word bad appear, the word alone appear, is when it's tied together with God said, this is not good. Alone. This is not good. The first thing we ever learn about being alone is it's not good. And then the root word of that word bad is badad, B-A-D-A-D, and it means actually to withdraw and to separate. And it actually means to isolate myself. And the word man here, yes, it's true, the husband and wife, he's saying that's not good for man to be alone. We're meant to be in a relationship. But it's not the word for male. It's actually the word man, as in mankind and humanity, is what this word means. So when God says this, what it means is he's saying it's not good for mankind, it's not good for humans to separate themselves, divide themselves, isolate themselves from someone. It's not good for them to pull away. And my question for that, I was like, but wait, God, Adam wasn't alone. He had you. He was in the garden. I mean, come on, he's walking in the garden and he is like the physical, like Jesus or God. He's right there with him, walking in the garden. Oh man, there's no issues. I don't know about you, but sometimes I'm like, God, we're good. It's everyone else is the issue, man. You know, like that's where the problem occurs is there, right? And so there's none of that. It's just him and God. He doesn't even know he needs someone else. He didn't know that, right? He has no past regrets. He has no sin. You know, he has got no parent issues. He's got no belly button, which means he has no parent issues, right? And so basically, he's got none of those things that just mess us up sometimes. He's in a perfect state of paradise alone with God forever. You're like, that's the dream. You know, that is heaven, right? That's what you think. And yet, God is the one, not Adam. God's the one who saw that and said, this is not good. Man's alone. That means that according to God, not according to me, according to God, me alone with him forever with no one else involved is bad. Me plus God alone, that's it, forever, equals not good. And the first question I'm bringing up, we're talking about community today, and the first question I'm bringing up is, do I need community? Well, according to God, in point 1A, you'll see this, that me plus only God equals not good, according to him. And yes, I get what people say when they say, all I need is God. And I agree. Like he's our priority. He's our savior. There is no equal. If you put anyone on his level, that's idolatry. That's not good. He is our one and only, our cornerstone, our salvation, he's our everything. And I get that. But people will use that as an excuse to isolate and withdraw from community, saying, all I need is God. And God's the one who said, no, that's not true. I'm sorry. You also need people. You need community. The thought that I can live and all I need is God alone, God says, no, you need helpers. You need partners. You need people in your life. 1B is this, that me plus God plus others equals very good. Like in the beginning, from day one, God designed it to only be very good when others were involved. God brought Eve. And I believe that if Eve was the answer, I believe that he's not just talking about marriage here. I believe he's talking about community and family. Because if it was perfect, God and Eve and Adam together, it would have stayed like that forever. But it didn't. He said it's only very good when he says what? Be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth, build a family, build a community of people. And only after he says this does he say, this is very good. God says you have to be in a community. And he said this to Adam and Eve. So that tells me that even couples, I see it all the time where couples are like, we just need each other and we need God and we're good, right? And just the two together with God. And God says, no, that is good, but it's not enough. You even as couples, you need to have a community. We cannot isolate. And King Solomon, he's the one that God says, this man has my wisdom. It says that he gave him, and there would be no one before him who ever had wisdom like him, no one after him. He is the wisdom of God, and this is what he says about it. In Proverbs 18:1, he says, whoever isolates himself seeks his own desire, and he breaks out against all sound judgment. And the word isolate actually means to divide, to separate. The one part where it says seeks his own desire, it's the desire word there is the same word for lust and the same word for coveting. So he's saying when you isolate and divide, you're actually only seeking after your own lusts. And he says you're breaking out, which means to literally fight, to quarrel, to fight against all sound judgment. Other translations, yours might say it, will say all wisdom. And in 1 Corinthians 1:24, it says that Jesus is the power and the wisdom of God. So when he says you're breaking out against wisdom, you're breaking out against Jesus. And so when he says here, he says that when you divide yourself from community, that you're actually only seeking your lustful desires, and it's all about you. And you are literally quarreling, bickering, fighting against Jesus himself. This is a serious issue. This is not like, okay, fine, I should probably make some friends. This is a serious issue. God's very serious about this. Just you have to have community in your life. Not just one, but multiple. And I'm not talking about retreat. Isolation and retreat are different. You see, retreat is when you pull away, you and your wife, or you alone with God, or you and your family, you go on a vacation or whatever. Retreat is for the sake of love. It's for the sake of self-care. Jesus pulled away to pray. You know, that's different because you see, retreat is I'm going to go get filled up so I can re-engage with my community, so I can come back. There's a full intention of coming back. And it's sometimes better for your community if you have a retreat, you know, right? It's actually for their love, right? I love you, so I gotta go, you know? And so it's okay. That's good. Isolation is when I pull away, I don't need anyone else. Isolation is rooted in fear. See, solitude and retreat's rooted in love. Isolation is rooted in fear. And it walls you out and it says, you know what? I don't need you. I'm pulling away. I'm finding another community. I'm leaving. And it's a pulling away. Everyone turn to your neighbor and poke them on the shoulder because I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to your neighbor and say, you need community. Right? And then turn to your another neighbor and say, I need you. Not in like a weird needy way though, like in a nice like, hey, I need you. Right? Just say, I need you. So the question is, I hope I've drilled a home that you need community. But the question is, why? Why is this so important? Why is God so serious about this thing, okay? Question 2, why do I need community. Well, and go with me to 1 Samuel chapter 10, verse 5. Well, this is kind of the main story we're going to build on today. And this story, I believe God shows his heart for community and why you have to get community in your life. So the story follows a man named Saul. And Saul, he's just a basic farmer guy. And the story starts where Saul has lost his donkeys. Literally, these donkeys have left and he has no idea where they are. And he's looking all over for them, can't find them, is at the end of himself and says, you know what? Maybe I'll go speak to, I'll find the prophet Samuel and he could tell me where my donkeys are. And he goes to Samuel, says, where are my donkeys? And Samuel says, you're the future king of Israel. And he's like, that's a lot more than donkeys. Like, I was just looking for my donkeys, and now I'm in charge of Israel. Like, what? And so he anoints him king of Israel, right? And this is where our story starts. So he's just an average Joe guy, right? Who's now, he lost donkeys. All I wanted was my donkeys. Now I'm in charge of everything, you know? And so we're following him. This is where the story starts, verse 5. It says, this is Samuel speaking to Saul after he anointed him. He says, after that, you will go to Gibeah of God where there's a Philistine outpost. That's the enemy, Philistine outpost there. He says, as you approach the town, you will meet a procession of prophets coming down from the high place with lyres, timbrels, pipes, harps, some translations say tambourines, you know, and they being played before them, and they will be prophesying. Verse 6, the Spirit of the Lord will come powerfully upon you, and you will prophesy with them, and you will be changed into a different person. Once these signs are fulfilled, do whatever your hand finds to do, for God is with you. Verse 9, jump to 9. It says, as Samuel turned to leave, or Saul turned to leave Samuel, God changed Saul's heart. And all these signs were fulfilled that day. When he and his servant arrived at Gibeah, procession of prophets met him. The Spirit of God came powerfully upon him, and he joined in their prophesying. When all those who had formerly known him saw him prophesying with the prophets, they asked each other, what is this that has happened to the son of Kish? Is Saul also among the prophets? His old community didn't recognize him anymore. Two things I want to focus on that I believe God shows his heart for community and why we need to be involved in community. The first one is in verse 9, where it says, as Saul turned to leave Samuel, so he's leaving, it says, God changed Saul's heart, and all these signs were fulfilled. You see, an encounter with a man or a woman of God or a pastor or a prophet or maybe just one someone in the congregation, an encounter with someone who knows God, God will use it to change your heart. His heart was changed because Samuel delivered this word over his life. So why community? Point 2A is this, is to change my heart. See, God knew where Saul was. Saul was isolated. Saul, upon losing something, upon losing those donkeys, finally was drawn out to seek a man of God. And he had to be drawn out and admit, I need help. So sometimes I believe God will let you lose your donkeys because it's the only way that he can kind of kick you into community. Sometimes it's like the pain of losing something, these materials, and coming to the end of myself and not knowing where to go. It's like, all right, fine, I need someone else. I can't find these donkeys. I need someone else to help me. What if you losing your donkeys is not the devil attacking you, but God trying to get you into community? Sometimes you're like, the devil's stealing my donkeys. And it's like, maybe God's trying to get you to ask for help and to admit, I need people. Sometimes we don't go to the body of Christ until we're in need. And it's actually the mercy of God to put us in a state of need so that we'll go find community. And so I just want to encourage you, just start with the one. He started with Samuel. Just start with the one. You know, even Jesus, he said, go out two by two. He said, don't go alone. Find someone to go out with. Why? Because it changes your heart. God could have changed Saul's heart alone out in the field with his donkeys, but he waited until he said, I need help. And he reached out, and then God changed his heart. God plus Samuel plus Saul equals very good. God changed his heart, but only, if you notice, after he was intentional and after he stepped out. And I know, guys, one of the biggest things I've fought through in life is rejection. I know it's hard. I know it can be so hard to open up. You've been hurt. You've been hurt maybe by the church, or you've been hurt by an ex-relationship or by a parent or a friend. Or we all have pains and hurts. And a lot of times what happens is then we can wall in, we can shut down, we can isolate ourselves. And we're talking about being anchored in community. And sometimes the anchor breaks and it fell into the ocean. But that doesn't mean the anchor was the issue. And we say, the problem's anchors, right? I don't need anchors. They obviously don't work. It's like, no, they do work. That chain broke because of the storm or something happened. But you can't say all anchors are failures now. And you have to go look for a new anchor. You have to intentionally find one. You cannot wait and just be like, well, the anchor needs to just tie itself to my boat. If God wants me to have an anchor, then I'll wake up and there'll be an anchor on my boat. You know, and it's like, no. You have to go look for a new anchor. Go look for new relationships. If one tears, that doesn't mean the issue is friends. If you had issues with the church, that doesn't mean the church is the issue. It's the answer. You have to get out there and try again. And I know it's hard, but it's so worth it. So worth it. It'll change your heart. Verse 6, it says, the Spirit of the Lord will come powerfully upon you, and you will prophesy with them, and you will be changed into a different person. So notice that an encounter through a single man, God changed his heart. But an encounter with a community transformed him into a different person. What transforms you, changes you into a different man or woman? God uses a whole community to do that. And so why community? Because it's to change me. To change me. No one individual, no one message, no one sermon, no one prophetic word will transform you. God will use it to change your heart. That was a great sermon, Pastor. It changed my heart. Awesome. He will use it to change your heart, but you will not transform into another person until you begin to walk with a community and engage with a community. What's interesting is God brought Saul all the way to Samuel, changed his heart, and then said, but now you have to go all the way over there if you want to be a different person. That's so interesting to me. I'm like, God, why didn't you not just change his heart and his person in one moment? Why did he say, but if you want a heart change, you have to go to that group of people over there and engage with them, walk with them? And I love this. It says he walked with them, chose to engage with them, and then the Spirit fell and he was transformed after he made the choice to engage with the community. And I believe he is showing the power of what happens when we choose to intentionally dive into a community rather than just a single person. There's one thing to get a prophet to speak in your life. It'll change you, your heart. But walking amongst the prophets changes you. A community will always be able to transform you more than an individual or a teaching will be able to. Even if it's the greatest prophet in the land, Samuel was the greatest prophet in the land. And a lot of you, we all have our favorite, you know, it's like Bill Johnson's the greatest, or Lou Engle, or Heidi Baker, or like you pick your person, all these people, we have our favorite teachings and that we love, and they're good, and we listen to them on podcasts or YouTube, and I love that. I listen probably to Bethel or one of those places every week. I love listening to that stuff. And it does impact me. It does change my heart, but it cannot transform me. Only a community will do that. God waits until Saul chooses to inconvenience himself and make the choice. What's crazy is he says, hey, go walk past the Philistine outpost. That's the enemy territory. Go walk to that mountain over there and then wait and you'll see the community coming down. And this community is weird. Like, you look at it, he says, oh, yeah, you'll know them. They'll be the ones with the tambourines and the flutes coming down the mountain, prophesying. They're yelling out, whatever, you know, prophesying. They probably got their banners waving, their tambourines going, and Saul's just a shepherd guy. He's probably never seen anything like crazy. Like, this is charismania right here, you know? And they're coming down, and he just says, that's the group you need to choose to engage with. And only when you jump in with them are you going to be transformed. They look different than you. They act different than you. You're probably offended by them and the way they're worshiping and going for it, right? But that's the group you got to jump into and engage with. And God did not say, hey, Saul, go find the community that plays the music you want. Oh, hey, go find the preacher that preaches the best sermon every single week, you know? He doesn't say, oh, hey, go find the place that has the good venue and serves the coffee and the donuts you like. You know, that's your community. Go find the one that's like 2 minutes down the road. It's closest to you. You know, that's probably your community. He literally says, no. You'll be transformed when you dive in to the one that's even inconvenient to you. God did not put, this is huge, God did not put the responsibility of Saul's change on the community. He put it on Saul choosing to engage with the community. The prophets are doing their thing. They're just going down the mountain, right? And they're worshiping, doing their thing. And it wasn't their responsibility to change Saul. It wasn't their responsibility to transform him. It was his responsibility to engage with them. And then the Spirit of God fell and he was changed. And so many of us, I've seen it in myself, in my past, and I've seen it just in like the Western church and in America. We treat church like a fast food restaurant and not like a family. We come with a list of everything we needed to be comfortable. You know, it's like the music's got to be just right, not too loud, not too soft, just right. It can't be too long. Right? I don't want it like 40 minutes, 45. That's too much, you know. But I don't want it shorter than 30. I was just starting to cry. Come on. You know, like give me a solid like 33, 34 minutes, you know, right? And right? Or we come up, we're like, the preacher, he's got to be deep, but he's got to be funny. He's got to make me laugh. He's got to make me cry. He's got to challenge me and convict me, but not too much. Like, don't offend me, and then I'll get up and leave. There's a fine line between conviction and offense, and if you offend me, I'm leaving. I'll find another place, you know? And it's like, what? It's got to be this perfect pastor, perfect worship team, perfect, right? I got to feel warm and fuzzy when I came in, but not needy and cling to. You're like, I got to, it's like, come on. You know, And as long as they're, I don't know if there's a perfect church out there, but the minute you walked in, it wasn't perfect anymore. Oh! The minute I walked in this morning, the church ceased to be perfect. The minute Taylor Jensen comes to a church, it's not a perfect church anymore because Taylor's there, you know? As long as there's people in the seats of the church, it's an imperfect church, right? And we jump around with this grass is always greener on the other side mentality, saying, well, maybe this church is this. And we put the responsibility on the church to change us, on the community to change us. And we say, well, and I see a time and time where people come into a community, they're there for 1 year, maybe 2 years, right? And then they leave and they hop and they go somewhere else because they're not seeing the change in their life they want. And I see it time and time again, but it's not the community's job to change you. It's when you engage with the community, God changes you, right? And it's a vicious cycle I see all the time. We treat it like a fast food place. You see, the family dinner, it was never meant to be something where you just come to the table, shove food in your face, and leave. The dinner table was meant to be a place where we connect around the table. Around the food, but we connect together. It's not about just getting quick and leaving. And coming to church is not about getting a sermon, getting a worship thing, and then leaving immediately. It was always meant to be the food provided for you that we connect around. That we come to the table of church, and God feeds us in worship, in the message, and that. But it was always meant to connect us together. And we treat it where we're like, you know, I feel like hamburgers one day, I feel like tacos one day, I feel like I'm going to get takeout, you know. And we do this, we're like, you know, I'm going to go to this church on this Sunday, this church is a different culture, I'll go there the next Sunday, and I want takeout, I'm going to sit in my PJs and listen to a podcast, you know. Like, and it's, I love that stuff, don't get me wrong, it changes your heart, but when you choose to anchor in to the community, it's what changes you. And I see people, then they always wonder, they hop from table to table to table, and then they wonder why they're not getting the transformation they want. God's waiting for you to root in, to transform you into someone else. He's waiting for you to anchor in. You can listen to those podcasts and all that. That's great. I love it. But it doesn't mean you're rooted in a community. We have to choose to take the risk. We have to choose to open up, to serve, to love. We have to choose to get offended and then actually work through it. And I mean, I might have already offended you. And I'm like, welcome to the family, hey! You know? If I don't know if there's ever, I mean, I don't know if there's ever, I feel like family equals offense. Like there's no family that's like, oh, we've never offended each other once. It's like, no, that's proof. The fact that we worked through it, we're family now, you know? And so often we get offended with something was said and then we peace out. And it's like, man, I can be right all the time or I can have a family. Which one do I want, you know? Oh, I can have something perfect or I can have a family. And what do you really want? So the question, I hope I just nailed it in that you need this, you need community. Question three was, how do we start? How do you start? And I get it. We're laughing, we're joking, but I get it. There's been some real pains, you know, there's been some real hurts, and it's hard to kind of restart up a community again. And so sometimes just, where do I need to start? How do I get into this thing? Well, in Acts 2, verse 42, the author of Luke, he's talking about the early church and what did they do to kind of start to build, because the early church was a mess. And so they're trying to figure out, how do we build this thing? And this is what it says. It says, they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching, and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread and the prayers. To them, these were the three things they really devoted themselves to. To be a healthy Christian, this is what you have to devote yourself to. To being taught, teaching, that's the word. Those are those individuals that gave you a word. God showed you something in the word, and there's a teaching, a sermon, or whatever, and it changes your heart. It does. The second one was the fellowship. They devoted themselves to fellowship on equal level with the word. Because that changes you. And then it says, and the prayers. And they devoted themselves to prayer because I believe it changes the environment. But they had these three on equal levels. And it says also the breaking of bread. That's what we did at man camp. We ate a lot of meat, you know. God plus men plus meat equals very good, you know. So that's what we did. We put a priority up there. So that word, though, for fellowship, the word fellowship is the word koinonia. Many of us may have heard this word before, and it has a bunch of different definitions to it. The main one we see here is fellowship, but I believe if we look at the other definitions of the word, we can get God's heart behind what is true fellowship. And so the first one is this. Koinonia, it means fellowship, but the second definition, what it means is contribution. That's three A's, contribution. And how do you start to build a community? You got to contribute to it. And it means a gift. What it means is a gift jointly contributed as proof of fellowship. You can't just be like, hey, we're in fellowship, we're in community. And then when they say, I need you for something, you're like, peace out. You know, you got to contribute, which means it costs you something. A gift for someone else meant it cost you, right? And that's why it's a gift for them. And so you have to contribute. And the verse for that is Romans 15:26. I'm not going to read it for time. But the word contribution you'll see in there is the same word koinonia, fellowship. So how do I make a community contribute? If you want to build a community, you got to jump in and start contributing. And for some of you, this is, I'm not talking just money. I'm saying your time. Do you contribute with your time? If you show me your schedules, I can tell you what your priorities are. And do you serve? That's one way with your time. And the reason it's so important to serve, it's not just to get things done. Yes, that's huge and it helps. But when there's a serving community, you know, the ushers, when they're together, they build friendship and community, you know, when the worship team, there's a community there, there's the tech team, there's a community there that happens because you serve together, you sweat together, think crazy stories happen together, and you just build a community because you're contributing to that team. One of the greatest ways to build community, just jump in and start serving. But another thing is with your time, do you take people out to lunch? Do you pursue anchors? Do you pursue people and say, hey, I want to take you to coffee. Hey, I want to get to know you. Hey, are you invitational in reaching out and connecting with people? Or do we just expect them to pursue us? Saul had to pursue the community. He didn't just say, they got to find me all the way over here if they want me. If it's God, then they'll find me. It's, no, it was God, so he had to go find them. Another one, and this one's probably the scariest, is do you contribute emotionally? I've seen so many people, they give with their time, they give with their finances, they give with serving teams, they jump in, they're on every team, they're doing great. But when it comes to emotionally contributing, contribution means it's a cost. So when it comes time for them to share their heart, for them to open up, for them to be insecure in front of someone, they wall out, shut down. There's so many people where I'm so good at helping you with your stuff, but I'm not going to let you help me with my stuff, you know? And it's a two-way, the gift of my heart to you comes at a cost for me. I have to open up and allow you to see, you know? Will you contribute vulnerability to a group of people? And it is scary, and it is a risk. But man, it's worth it. It's so worth it. The next definition of koinonia is the word participation. And you can see that in 1 Corinthians 10:16. That word participation, once again, is koinonia. And how do you start to build a community? Will participate. Take action with that community. Do you share with them? Do you invite them to what you're doing? You know, do you invite them to your birthdays? Do you go to their birthdays? You know, do you participate with what's going on in their life? Here at the church, do you jump into a connect group? You know, participation is like our connect groups. That's a great way where you can cop in with 4 people or to 10 people maybe, and you can be vulnerable and you can open up and you can start to get these anchor points of people in your life. Do you engage with what's going on, you know, the 4th of July barbecues or the man camps or the big events, but also like their graduation and their big moments in their families' lives? And are you intentionally participating with them, with their community? And the last one, 3C, is this, that community is partnership. Partnership. The fourth meaning of the word koinonia is partnership, and it's actually a symbol of a hand, says pledging, I'm partnering with you. That's what fellowship means, is partnership. Community, it's a commitment. It says, I am partnering here, I'm anchoring here, I'm rooting here, I'm committing to these people, I'm committing to opening up this church, this family, my, you know, this group. You see, there's a battle between intimacy and independence. And you will always pay one to gain the other. They're inverse to each other. Intimacy is connection, relationship, into me. I'm going to let you see me. But it comes at the cost of independence. Or the reverse. If you want to be, I want to do it myself. I want to be on my own. I want to be free from this. You're kind of stepping out from intimacy there. And no one who says, I'm an independent person, I'm conquering the world, I could do this on my own, you're going to be alone. And I'll say that for couples as well. Maybe you got the family business, and it's cranking, and it's awesome, and God's moving in it. But unless you prioritize family or community, you'll be doing it alone. You have to partner with other families, partner with other couples to make it. An African proverb, it says that if you want to go quickly, go alone. But if you want to go far, go together. And this was something God said to me in my life as well. You see, Jesus, when we look at him, he had his closest friend. He had John, and then he had James and Peter, his three close ones. Start with one and then work your way to three. And then he had his 12. Work your way to 12, you know. Those close ones in your life. Don't make it dependent on one person. Get a group of people around you. Because if you have one person and they're your everything and they're sick, now your life falls apart. Or they're going through a depressing season, you have no one else. That's what you need. You need a group of people so that those five guys are having a hard week. So I'm gonna pour into them and help them while these guys pour into me. You have to have a group of people, not just one. And so for me, man, I've chosen to anchor my life into community, and it's come at a cost. It really has, because I've had to submit my own desires. I've had to give up certain things for the reward. I had to give up a lot of independence for the reward of community. And I remember the moment. So basically with me, I was traveling the world. I was this missionary, and I was going all over the place and going to all these nations. But I had to make new friends every, like, 6 months. And it looked romantic and glorious, and whoa, you're, like, going to another nation every week, you know. But I was alone. And I remember God asked me, I didn't even know the African proverb yet, but God asked me, do you want to get to your destiny faster alone? Are you willing to root in and get there to your destiny with a family? And I remember I was like, God, I want to do it with a family. He said, well, then take the time frame of how long you're going to be here. Take it off. Root in, anchor in, make a family. So I started to do all of these things because I realized me plus God alone equaled not good. My heart was on fire, but I had no community. So please, please, the answer is anchor in. It's funny, I go back to my old community now and I teach at different places and preach, and the same way where they say, they looked at Saul and they said, is Saul amongst the prophets? I go to these communities that I used to be a part of more, and they say, is Taylor a preacher now? And they've literally said, Taylor, I had one teacher. She said to me, she in a whole group of people, she said, if you would have told me that Taylor was called to be a preacher, I would have bet you my house mortgage against you. And I'm like, I don't know if that's a compliment, you know, but glad you didn't. You would have lost your house because I became a preacher, you know. Because she said Taylor was the quiet, shy, nerdy kid, you know, in the back. Him preaching, that didn't make any sense. Because when I became a part of a community, God fell upon me and it transformed me into a different person. And I'm telling you, that's it for you. So do I need community? Yes, me plus only God's not good. Me plus God plus others is very good. Why do I need community? It's to change my heart. And it's to change me. And how do you start? Koinonia, fellowship, contribution, participation, partnership. Take the risk. Find a community. Throw down your anchor. Sit at the table.
Thank you for listening to the Sermon of the Week. Be sure to visit summitsanmarcos.com for other exciting content from Summit Church.